I'll open with Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21. Reading from verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. And we'll just stop there. Camp work has been going on in the Pretty Valley area. That's just south of Swan River. It's been going on for over 50 years. We had our Jubilee year a couple of years ago. And as you all know, there's a lot of maintenance work that has been done, and a lot of maintenance work that still needs to be done. There's one that's been a particular problem for me for many years, and that's the plumbing in the basement. And I actually had the opportunity. Every year I go through the same thing. I go down there and I see more deterioration in that basement. The problem is that the beam and the floor joists of the basement has literally rotted away. Like, the beam is sitting on the floor, the teleposts are sitting on the floor. I go down there in the spring, and there's almost a foot of water down there, and I have to. This is literally what I have to do. I have to go like this along the wall because it'll collapse right there. And I did that last fall. The only reason I need to go down there really is I need to close a valve in the springtime, so that the water won't pour into the basement when I turn the water on. And in the fall time, I have to open the valve so that the water drains out, so the plumbing system won't freeze up. That's pretty much all I need to do. There are other things, but they're working fine. I said to myself last fall when we winterized the camp, that I would never do this again. That if the water hadn't been fixed, there wasn't going to be a camp. Because you have to see this. I would tell anybody that they are lunatics for going down there. I do. I won't let anybody down there. And I was telling the Lord this. Lord, what am I going to do? I'm not going down there. And if I'm not going down there, there's no water. And if there's no water, there's no camp. And I reasoned in my heart that I have control. I have control. I can make the decision. I'm reasoning to myself, saying, you know, if I canceled camp, that would give us 2 weeks that we could actually work on this water and get it done. And whether that would be worth it or not, that's what I was struggling with. I didn't want to sacrifice any more of my time. I had all kinds of reasons. And then I took a deep breath and I took a flashlight and put on some rubber boots, and I went down and I closed the valve. That's what I did. Camp was wonderful. I would say it had to be the best year of camp that we ever had. The Lord had to remind me that while I may be in charge, I am very, very not in control. I am not in control. I'll take a break there and just say I feel a need to somehow defend camp. I think there's something that kind of it's a ghost. It's a ghost that I've heard it off and on for many years about people's view of camp. and that they don't really think of it as Christian gospel work, and for various reasons. I can understand completely, because there's lots of camps. I'll give you an idea of what I heard. The day I was picking up, I was on my way to Ashfield to pick up a couple of ladies and we were going to pick everybody. We were just getting ready to head up to camp for the first week. And I heard on the radio, it's an advertisement from Canadian Sunday School Missions. Now, their camps are already, they're starting the same week as us. And they're saying that there is still a need for workers, for camp leaders. They call them counselors. Can you hear me? I'll try to speak louder. There. Sorry. But I heard this announcement on the radio that they were still looking for positions to fill for these camps. And speaking to different people, I've heard different things over the years. Somebody told me this year that some camps are over $500 a week. And how a lot of the people who work at these camps, because they're being paid, it's a job for them. And really, in this person's view, they really shouldn't be there. I understand that. Some camps focus a lot on the events, on the activities that go on. They got horseback riding, they got the zip lines, they've got all those things. And they spend a lot of time, archery, and they spend a lot of time on those things. And maybe they spend too much time. Maybe they don't spend enough time in the gospel. I've never attended a camp like that. I just hear what other people have said. And I can certainly understand. But at the same time, I remember for a number of years, there was a gospel tent set up on Logan Avenue just east of Salter. And there was always piles of people in there every night. And there was some kind of a gospel ministry going on there. And you know what? I never went there. Maybe I was curious, but I never went there. And you know why? Because I didn't know who was involved in the gospel there. And while at the same time, I would definitely like to support the gospel tent meetings that have gone on this summer. So my point to the camp is, yes, we call ourselves Pretty Valley Bible Camp, but please don't associate us with those camps who maybe they're in it partially because they're making money off it, and maybe they don't have a clear gospel, because the clearest gospel, our theme this year that I never told anybody, but it just worked out that way, was keep it simple. These are boys and girls aged 7 to 12. I told all of the campers this week, we don't have those. All the staff, all the volunteers, from those who are in the cabins looking after the children, to those who are working in the kitchen, and those who are just around. Everybody was told, we don't have the archery, we don't have the zip lines. We don't have. I mean, one girl. We talked about the water sports and water games, and one girl said, she put up her hand and said, how many boats do you have? Those of you that have been there know our river is about the size of Sturgeon Creek. And but the attraction is them, those volunteers who are there, those kids. And I can only say that they say it's them, it's because they see Christ, they do. You're not in it. Those that come, they're not in it for the money. They're not in it. They're in it because they want to serve the Lord. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but that's the attraction. A lot of the kids, they say, you know, yeah, they have all these fancy things, but I was bullied. I was bullied by a boy there, or the cabin leaders were always in another room with themselves, you know, doing their own activities, and we could do whatever we wanted. And you know, that might sound fun and dandy for a 14 or 15 year old, but when you're 7 and you've been with your parents, this is the first time you've been away from your parents, that's a scary thing to wake up and you find that your cabin leaders aren't there. So the those that come and help, every last one of them are certainly a blessing. And those of you who have come and in the past, we certainly every year we always wish that you would come back. I'm gonna read this verse for you. Especially you men, I appreciated what Jack said today, that the ladies were there. You know, staffing girls camp is never an issue. There's always enough. It's the boys camp. The boys camp is the hardest, and you know, and it's just natural. I think if you guys are looking for a challenge, come to camp. You guys will thoroughly be challenged. And those of you who have come, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, for those of you who have been at camp and now you're not, I'm going to read you this one because I was explaining to somebody. They said he was asking me about mentoring. He says, "Do you mentor at the camp?" I says, "Well, sure I do." He says, "Well, what's going on?" I says, "Well, they get married, and then you know, and then I don't see him again." Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5. Some of you know, when a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken. Deuteronomy 24, verse 5. Daniel, you've got a year. As well, the rest of you are lagging behind. You have to come back. All right. Okay, so what we do at camp, like I say, we don't, you know, it's the same as here. We during a gospel meeting, we preach the gospel. There's no altar call. There's no push for you to be saved. You know, for you to be saved. Of course, we want you to be saved. We have a morning chapel and an evening chapel, and we try to run it very, very similar to the way the children's meetings are run, and they go very well. This year we received blessing. A 9-year-old boy by the name of Austin professed to be saved. We'd like to keep tabs on him because he's got lots of younger brothers. And he was certainly a good little boy this year. So we don't really, how do you say this? I guess the way I see it, because of their age, of course we want them to get saved. But what we're doing is planting seeds. You know, I remember it wasn't too many years ago. Okay, it was a few years ago. But when I think it was the very first gospel meeting I ever attended here, and I was 26 years old, and the gentleman who was up on the platform, he said we all know that, you know, that well known verse, John 3:16, and he started to quote it. You know, I had never heard it before. At 26 years of age, I'd never heard it before. And you know, the boys and the girls that come to this camp, it's again, that's where it keep it simple. They haven't heard the story of Adam and Eve. They don't know the story of Noah. You mentioned Elijah, and they don't know. They may have heard the name Jesus, but they don't they know extremely little, which makes it relatively easy, although to explain to them, because we have to get simple with them. You know, some of the boys were new, the volunteers were new for the first time. And so I told them, I said, you know, they're 7 years old. They're 9 years old. I just be simple. I says you don't have to teach them the definition of propitiation. And what did one of the brothers do? He got up in the evening and he started laughing, and because of what I said, and he said, I want to give you the definition of propitiation to the kids. And you know what? That's I don't even remember what I said. I remember what he said. You know, it was perfect. It was so simple. He used a little word picture, and he made the point. The boys got the point, and it was very well done. We had 20 campers each week. Answers to prayer. We had many answers to prayer. As I said, boys camp was a challenge to. We were short, and somebody paid us a visit during the first week. Sid Emberley, and. Immediately, I didn't even greet him. I told him he was a few days early, because boys camp didn't start for another few days. He hadn't planned on coming, but after being there and seeing and tugging at his heartstrings, he did come and share the week. So him as well as the rest was a real big answer to prayer. On a smaller note, we were tubing, and we're always concerned about the river and whether the river is too high or too low. And the river was just right. The river was just right for girls. Admittedly, it was a little low for the boys. But you have to see it from a child's perspective. We're floating on these big farm tractor tubes down this river about the size of Sturgeon Creek, and the water's about between my knee and my waist. And when you come to the rocks, it's actually probably about that deep. And so if there's three or four kids on a tube, and plus there's a few adults. You have to get up and kind of push the tube along. And one of the fellas commented, I won't say who, Travis, but he said, oh man, this river, it's so shallow. Man, my feet are sore, because you're slipping on the rocks. And he's, this is nuts. This is crazy. I understand completely. Several years ago, I did exactly the same thing. I fell in the water, and I dislocated my finger. My finger was up like that. So I understand completely. The very next morning, somebody came up and said, "You know, I was down at the river, and the beavers got in there, and actually changed the whole scenery of the river that overnight." And it actually raised up the water level by about 8 inches, and you were answered. You were answered, and we did go tubing again, and it was a lot better. But yes, for an adult, yeah, there's perils, but you know, for the boys and the girls, it's like tubing, it's like whitewater rafting in Jasper. They are so fired up. They are so excited. They just can't get enough. It only takes about 20 minutes, but it just makes their day. And I, from an adult perspective, we think, why even bother this year? Why even bother inflating? It's just, it's so little, but it's a real thrill to them. And you know, Over the years, another highlight for me, and I think this is what camp work is about. It's about growth for the volunteer, for those who are coming to help. We asked, there's a boy, his name is Quinn. He professed to be saved about 3 years ago, and he's always been a camper. We brought him along as a sort of a junior helper, and over the years I've witnessed him. He's you know, all the boys are playing, and he's off in a corner helping his cousin learn verses, and then his cousin got saved. And then he was helping somebody else. And then that person got saved. And so we invited him and one of his cousins. And his cousin didn't come, but he did. And he's 14 years old. And he kind of didn't know where, I think he didn't know where he fit in. You know, he was kind of a camper, kind of a helper, and he was having fun. Well, the last night, And the last night was quite an eventful night, because as I said, at the beginning I thought I was in control, and I really wasn't, and I hadn't quite come to the realization that God was in control. But the very last night, there was a boy in my cabin named Monty, and tall, you know, he didn't have a lot of confidence, and he didn't think he could learn the verses, so he wasn't trying. He wasn't trying to learn any verses because he didn't want to fail. And so it's evening time. We're all relaxing in the cabins. We had just finished our devotions, and we said, okay, you know, if you guys want to learn verses, you know, tell me verses for points, and they're going away. And And I said, Monty, I said, Monty, if I teach you a verse, I'll teach you a verse in 15 seconds. And I says, and then you have to learn one for me. I says, is it a deal? He's laughing at me. He says, yeah. So I taught him a portion of 1 John 4:14. And if you don't know it right now, you'll learn it in 10 seconds. It goes like this. The Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. 1 John 4:14. I did that about 3 times. He got it. He got it right away. And any child, any age, can do that. I don't know if it's just the rhythm, whatever it is. He got it. Okay, now you have to learn one for me. So I gave him Acts 16 and 31. And I sent Quinn over to him. When I sent Quinn, he just blossomed. That was him. And it took him 10 minutes to learn the first one. I'm trying to go to bed now, and there's still I actually have my eyes closed, and there's a boy, and he's going like this, waking me up, and he's telling me a verse. This went on for about an hour. That boy learned 10 verses. That boy learned 10 verses. I heard that back in the days that if you wanted to go to camp for free, you had to learn, I can't remember if it was 50 verses or 500 verses. And I just, as a man, I thought, wow, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. But you know, he learned 10 verses in an hour. And not just partial verses, the whole verse. And I was dumbfounded. I was amazed, wonderfully amazed, that he had learned all these. Well, now it's the last night. This is where God reveals to me that He's in control. Greg knocks on the door, Greg Whiff, and he comes in and he says, Richard, there's no water. Like I said, I'm half asleep, and I said, what do you mean there's no water? He says, well. He said, there's no water. There's no water in the kitchen. There's no water in the bathroom building. There's no water. And it's dark. And I can say it safely now that I don't think anybody knew, but there was a bear nearby. And So that was the last thing I wanted to know. I almost toyed with, oh, well, they're going home in the morning. But I thought, well, no, we have to see what we can do. I didn't want to walk down. There's a path that goes down to the well. It's about 600 feet through the bush downhill. And like I said, it's dark. And the river's right beside it, so if there is a bear coming, you can't hear it for the rushing of the water. And there's just something about walking in the dark at night. It's just something. But so Greg and Sid and I, we went to check the breaker first off. That's what you do. Breaker was fine. The next thing was I had to check and see if the switch was working. Well, the switch is right beside the valve down in the basement. And so I went, got my rubber boots on, grabbed the flashlight, grabbed two flashlights. And I went down there, and I didn't have my glasses on. And so I went, and something didn't look right. It just didn't look right. So, and they're upstairs and they're calling to me, is everything okay? And I said, I see something. Something is not right. And if you know anything about the water switches, there's two little connections, and they open and close like this. When they close, the water pump turns on, and when they open, it closes off the water, so it doesn't build up too much pressure. Well, in that little, there was something in there, and it looked to me that it just wasn't making the connection. I wasn't positive, and I actually thought that's probably not the problem. But so we shut the power off again, and I fumbled around. I found a little twig or something like that, and I started poking in there, and here it was a little beetle. A little beetle had crawled in there, and just as the pump was trying to turn on, it squashed the beetle. And it's magnetic, so it's trying to close, but it's not making the connection. So I cleaned it up, I blew it out. I said, I stood there. I said, okay. And now my flashlight's going off. It's starting to burn out. And I said, turn it back on. And as soon as it turned the breaker back on, I could hear the rush of water going through. And then I did one of these again because of where I was in, and we crawled back out and everything was fine. But you know, I was so concerned about the water. And here, God controlled it with a little beetle. He uses the simple things to confound the wise. I'm a humbled man because of that. When I come to camp every year I come to camp, and the Lord shows something new. Do you see on a daily basis how the Lord answers your prayer? He does. He really does. We've seen over the years, we've seen hurricane force storms physically move, like coming straight forward. You can see it miles away, and all of a sudden it moves. Like we've seen that. We've had two or three times where there's been tornadoes as close as not the road into camp, but the road that connects the camp. We've seen tornadoes right there. And we were putting the metal siding on that day. 16-foot sheets of metal siding. That would have been fun. But Jack had mentioned about doing, are you doing this for duty? Or are you doing it out of love? You know, if you're doing it out of duty, it's a chore. If you do, and you know what? And camp work is exhausting. I don't mean it like that. I mean, if you're not doing it for it's exhausting, but you reap the benefits. How many tent meetings do you go to, and you could walk into a tent meeting, and sit and listen to the gospel for an hour, go glance at the table where the tracks are, and you take a tract, and you say, well, I haven't seen that one before, and you take that one, you put it in your pocket, and you bring it home, and you read it. And we go away unnoticed. And you just go about your business. But if you talk to somebody who I'm sure Jack would tell you, if I said to Jack, oh, all you do is you go and you preach for an hour, and then you're gone. And it's like, no, he does far, far more than that. There's so many things that we can do in service. You know, we can go downstairs to have lunch. We come back up for ministry, and we don't realize that somebody went to great work to set up the chairs. I've set up a gospel tent. That's a lot of work. We've done all kinds of things, and when you do something like that, you get a deeper appreciation. You know, if you need a deep if you're looking for a deeper appreciation in the church, get involved. Get busy. You be used. Let yourself be used. I'm gonna say camp work. You know, I realize the time pressure, but you know what? When you think about it, it's 5 days out of a year for 1 week, 10 days if you're gonna stay for both. And you know what? Every year I go, every year I say it's worth it. And those boys and girls, even if they didn't get saved at camp, how many people have you spoken to that come in off the street, and you have a conversation with them, or even your neighbors, and they'll say, and again, for you men, my grandma used to teach me that when I was a kid. My mom used to teach me that when I was a kid. I learned this verse. I learned that verse when I was a child. And they're seeds. They're seeds. They are. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. They're, you know, even if they come for 4 or 5 years from 7 to 12, and all they learn is believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved, because it's on the back of a song. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's more than I knew at 26 years of age. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we do thank you again this lovely day for just for loving us. Father, there's that hymn that that says, I can't think of it right now. By and by, when I look on his face, I'll wish I had given him more. Our Father, we thank you that we.